We now begin a whole new Masechta, Maseches Pesachim, and this will serve as the general introduction to the Masechta. So the theme of the Masechta is the holiday, the Chag of Pesach, which already raised the unusual question, why is the Masechta called Pesachim, which means the plural, Pesachs? Now the word Pesach can refer both to the Chag, the holiday, as well as to the particular Korban, the offering, the Paschal Lamb, the Pesach. So according to Tosfos Yom Tov, it's referring to the specific offering, the Pesach, and the reason why it's plural, Pesachim, is because there's a special rule that applies uniquely to the Korban Pesach, which is those who couldn't bring the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan because they were too far, or they were Tmei Meis, they were Tamei and couldn't bring it. So then there's a special, separate new Korban brought on the 14th of the next month, the 14th of Iyar, called Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach. And since there are two different Pesachim that are brought, the regular Pesach and the Pesach Sheni, so therefore, says Tosfos Yom Tov, it's referring to both of those. The Miri says something quite unusual and interesting. He says that really originally, the Masechta was divided into two separate Masechtos. There was Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, two separate documents or two separate Masechtos, one that focused on the specifics about the Korban, the offering, and one that focused on the holiday, meaning the prohibition against having chametz, eating matzah, the Pesach Seder, etc. So there are two separate Masechtos, which later on, says the Meiri, after the Korban, when there's no longer a Beis HaMikdash, and therefore the Korban Pesach didn't stand alone as a separate offering anymore, but as part of the larger Pesach holiday, even without the offering, so it became combined into a single Masechta, but was still referred to as Pesachim, to reference both halves. Now the truth is, they both could be true, of course, and the way our Masechta now is structured is clear there are two parts of it. There's one part that refers, that focuses on the holiday, which is basically about chametz, matzah, Leil HaSeder, and the other part, which focuses on the specific offering of the Korban Pesach. So, let's just go over there and the structure of the Masechta and the mitzvahs that it covers briefly here. First of all, remarkably, the Rambam counts a total of 24 mitzvahs that are specific to the holiday of Pesach. Eight of them focus on the Chag, and another 16 of them focus on the offering. Now, as far as the structure of the Masechta, basically the first four chapters, as well as the 10th chapter, focus on the Chag, that is the Chametz and Matzah, the Maror, the bitter herbs, as well as the Leil HaSeder, the Mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling over the story of Pesach. And then the middle chapters 5 to 9, focus on the Korban. So, in the big picture, as far as the holiday is concerned, so we said there are eight mitzvahs in total. Basically, there are three mitzvahs ase to focus on, positive commandments, which are, number one, the requirement to rid chametz, be your chametz, get rid of chametz. The second is the obligation to eat matzah. And the third is the obligation to do Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to tell over the story of the Exodus of Egypt. And there are five lavin, five prohibitions that all revolve around the chametz issue. Two are called Bal Yira and Bal Yimatze, not to see your chametz in your presence, or even to have your own chametz in your possession, even if you can't see it, as well as not to eat chametz, not to eat a mixture of chametz, and not to even eat chametz from the 14th day of Nisan, the day before Pesach starts. So that is the essential topic of the first four and final 10th chapter of the Masechta, more specifically, the first chapter, which we'll discuss starting from, you know, the next Mishnah, is the mitzvah of bedika, of checking for chametz, as well as the getting rid of chametz. The second chapter deals with bal yira and bal yimatzah, not having chametz, as well as the mitzvahs of matzah and maror, what is acceptable for the use of matzah and for maror, the bitter herbs. The third chapter discusses mixtures, tarovas, mixtures that contain chametz. And the fourth chapter talks about, primarily about the prohibitions of working on the 14th of Nisan, meaning the day before Pesach, the day that the Korban Pesach is brought. As we'll see, the day before Pesach is like almost like a quasi Yom Tov all to itself, where there's restrictions on doing work, as well as restrictions on Midoraisa already from having chametz, etc. So the fourth chapter focuses on that. And then the 10th chapter, the famous Arve Pesachim, it's called, Pesach Eve, evening, is referring to the process of the Leil HaSeder, how the Seder plays itself out. Fascinating Masechta, Perek, I should say. And we'll get there, Bez Hashem, soon enough. So there you have your mitzvahs of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, as well as eating the matzah, etc. Okay, then the middle Prakim 5-9 are focused on the Korban Pesach. Now, Korban Pesach is especially important. Every mitzvah is important, of course, but the Korban Pesach is really quite central to Judaism. As first of all, you can just see by the fact that when it comes to the most severe, the most important of the mitzvahs, you will carry, if one abrogates them, they carry the most severe penalties. So the most severe penalties, usually in the Averas, they carry kares, divine excision, whatever that means exactly. And it typically applies to lav and prohibitions against breaking Shabbos, against, you know, incest, against idolatry, and so on. But there are two mitzvahs, ase, positive commandments, for which one who fails to do those things would be liable for kares. And those are failure to get bris milah and failure to bring the Korban Pesach. So it really is on the highest level of sort of centrality to being Jewish and identifying as a Jew. You might think of the bris milah as the way one identifies being part of the Jewish nation on a personal, private, individual level, whereas the Korban Pesach is really how one identifies with being part of the Jewish people on the national level. You know, my Pesach Seder at home, the first song we sing is not Kadesh Ruchatz. We actually sing Happy Birthday to Us, to the chagrin of my children who are embarrassed every year about it. But because the Pesach holiday celebrates the birth of the Jewish people and us and our national identity, that we have a common history and a common destiny. So that's the central point of Pesach, and the Korban Pesach really allows us to experience that. Recalling back to the fact of what happened in the Exodus of Egypt, as well as the fact that the whole structure of the Korban Pesach is done as a community and really on a national level. I like to say in my Pesach Seder every year, or around that time, that you see that Eliyahu HaNavi, when he, in the story of Eliyahu HaNavi, back in, he had the showdown in the Har HaKarmel, in the Mount Carmel, where he showed that the priests, the Jewish priests who were serving this Baal, this idolatrous idol there in Canaan. So he sort of showed that they were full of nonsense and really Hashem was the only God. And then those 300 Baal priests ended up dying in that showdown. The next day, he gets run out of town for killing them. Jezebel, and so they chased him out. He ran back to, and the Jews turned against him. So he ran back to Horeb, Har Sinai, and basically says to Hashem, Hashem, take back your Torah. The Jewish people have abandoned your Torah. And, you know, since they've forsaken your Torah and abandoned it, you should take it back. To which Hashem responds to Eliyahu HaNavi, you're fired. You can't be the leader of the Jewish people if you don't believe in them. And you must hand over the mantle leadership to your student, Elisha. But then it's very interesting. Eliyahu ends up being, he doesn't really die. He like gets zoomed off to heaven in a chariot of fire. But we have a tradition that Eliyahu HaNavi comes back throughout the Jewish year at every Bris Milah. He has a Kisach Eliyahu. And at every Pesach Seder, he has a Kosh Eliyahu. We remember Eliyahu in those two times. And I like to say the reason why that happens is really Mida Keneged Mida, that Eliyahu HaNavi, who said the Jews have abandoned the Torah, will have to see that indeed they never abandoned the Torah, that the Jews stuck to Hashem through thick and thin, and therefore every time that there's a Pesach Seder and the Jewish people are identifying on a national level to be part of the Jewish people, just as in a Bris Milah, when individual children are brought into the covenant to be identified as part of the Jewish people, so Eliyahu HaNavi is there to witness it. So we're talking here about the Korban Pesach, the central mitzvah. The truth is that, as we said, or we will say, Bez Hashem, when we get to Kadshim, that when it comes to Zvachim, that's animal sacrifices. So a Zevach can come from a cow, goat, or sheep, and they're really, they can divide into two categories, Kadshe Kadshim and Kadshim Kalim. The more holy, if you will, more sanctified, and the less so. So Kadshe Kadshim includes the Chatas, the Asham, and the Ola. And then the Kadshim Kalim, there are five Kadshim Kalim, the lesser sanctified ones, they include the Shlamim, the Toda, the Meiser, the Bechor, and the Pesach. So the Korban Pesach is a korban all to itself. It's brought from either a baby, like a first-year goat or sheep, and it has its own rules, and many of the rules are peculiar just to the Korban Pesach, as is Zevachot itself. Brought on the 14th of Nisan, the day before Pesach begins, if you will, meaning the day before the night of Leil HaSeder, and unlike all other korbanos, it can't be eaten after it's brought. Usually when it comes to other korbanos, you bring a zevach, you offer the blood on the mizbeach, and that is matir, it permits the meat to be eaten, but not true when it comes to Korban Pesach. The blood is applied back on the 14th, but the Korban Pesach won't be eaten until the 15th. And I always say, people get confused, if I ask you, what's for dinner if the Beis HaMikdash were around? What would we eat for dinner during Pesach, at the Pesach Seder? And I think many people think the dinner at Pesach Seder is the Korban Pesach. Wrong. Dinner for the dinner at the Pesach Seder would be a shlamim, and then after the shlamim, after you're finished eating dinner and you're no longer hungry, al hasova, once you're satisfied and no longer hungry, then you would eat from the Korban Pesach. That's why we have the egg on the Seder plate to remind us of the chagiga, that's the shlamim that would be eaten on the night of for dinner at the Seder, and then the afikoman is a reminder for the dessert that would come at the end. That would be the eating of the Korban Pesach. Everyone has to eat at least a kazayas, an olives amount of the Korban Pesach, and that's the kazayas that we're eating of the afikoman at the end of the Pesach Seder. So, just consistent with what I said up to now, so there are a number of mitzvahs. I told you there are totally of 16 mitzvahs around the Korban. The two mitzvahs, there's some kind of double accounting a little bit, as much as there's some that double up mitzvahs Asay and Love, and you got the Pesach Sheni and so on. But the main themes of those mitzvahs are the two mitzvahs Asay is to bring this offering, as we just discussed, and also to eat the kazayas of it, like we discussed. Collectively, the group must, that this Pesach, Korban Pesach belongs to, they must eat the entire animal, all of the meat, etc. But each individual must have at least one kazayas. Now, the way that the Korban Pesach is brought as part of a chabura. It belongs to a particular group. And the members of that group have to be established prior to Pesach, prior to its offering. They're all menuyim. They're all like on a roster of the people who belong to this particular Pesach. Everyone has to be in Korban Pesach, but everyone belongs to a particular roster. And then, of course, because the animal's relatively big and has to be all eaten, so you'll have multiple people that will be assigned and belong to a single Korban Pesach offering. So the losa says that revolve on the Korban Pesach, really fashionably also really focus on this unity of the Jewish people and the togetherness, as the Maharal explains at length. The basic mitzvahs are that the Korban Pesach must be eaten after being roasted in an open fire, tzli it's called, roasting, as opposed to not muvushal, not as raw, and not muvushal, not cooked with water, like boiled. Maharal explains when you boil something, it tends to fall apart. Like meat, you know, the chicken left in the pot to cook, it's, you know, kind of soft-boiled chicken, blech. Whereas if you roast something on the barbecue or whatever, so gets, you know, it gets tighter together. It actually kind of shrinks and sticks together more. Again, pointing to the Korban Pesach not falling apart, but rather being stuck together, the idea of unity and wholeness amongst your chabur and the Jewish people. Similarly, there's a prohibition against leaving any of the meat over till the morning. The point is it has to be eaten as a whole unit. No one can leave any of it behind. You can't break a bone of the Korban Pesach. Again, the idea of it should be whole and not broken, because we're talking about the unity. And it can't even be brought out from the room in which this chabur is eating the Korban Pesach. So you can't take, say, some of the meat and put it out the window, let alone take it to another house or something like that. That's a Isser Doraisa from taking of the Korban Pesach out. It stays together with this group and eaten as a whole unit to symbolize, again, the unity of the Jewish people, symbolized by chabur, each group and family to itself. Okay, there's also specific isurim against letting someone not part of the nation participate in eating of the Korban Pesach. Specifically, there are two lavin. One is that you can't give it to a Yisrael Meshumad. That means a Jew who is an apostate and now has turned to idolatry. He may not eat from the Korban Pesach. That's a lav all to itself. As well as you can't give it to a non-Jew. The way that this mitzvah is always phrased is not to give it to a Toshav and a Sakhir. People get misunderstood here. A Toshav, which means a resident, let's say, is referring to a non-Jew who lives in Israel, but he's a Ger Toshav. That means he's not Jewish, but he's permitted to live in Eretz Yisrael because he keeps and is formally committed to keep the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, the seven mitzvahs that every Gentile is required to keep, since he keeps those basic rules. So he's permitted to live in Israel amongst the Jewish people. He's not a Jew, though. Therefore, he may not eat as a Toshav from the Korban Pesach. And also the Sechir is the hired worker. We're referring now to some kind of, like, say, a migrant worker or something. Again, not Jewish, who's for a time working in the home of the Jew and part of the household. And he, however close they feel to him, they may not let him partake of eating the Korban Pesach, because he's not part of the Jewish nation, and it's prohibited for a Sechir, even someone who's, you know, working with the family, to eat, you know, the household, whatever it is, to eat of the Korban Pesach. Okay, so those are the basic mitzvahs that revolve on the Korban Pesach. So, and those are really the topic of chapters 5 through 9 of the Masechta, and more specifically, chapter 5 and 6 focuses on the offering of the Korban. The 7th chapter focuses on how it is to be roasted, the tzlia, the roasting of the korban, as well as what happens if things, if tuma gets introduced to the picture. We'll discuss that in the 7th parak. The 8th parak focuses primarily on the menuim, the roster, people who are assigned and who can be assigned and how they can be assigned and so on, to the korban pesach. And the 9th parak focuses on two topics, both the pesach sheni, when that is applicable and required, and also what happens if a korban pesach either gets lost or mixed up with other korbanos, how you deal with those problems. So, and then again, the 10th parak goes back to Arvei Pesachim, what happened on Leil HaSeder, the Seder night. So that is basically the scope of our Masechta, and Be'ez Hashem now we'll begin with the first parak, going back to Bedikas Chametz, prep that's done before Pesach even begins, to make sure that one doesn't have Chametz on Pesach.